Anglicans get that. We take sacraments. We have a whole appreciation for the extraordinariness of the ordinary and how something that's simple as bread and wine could become something very sacred. It's because ultimately all of creation is sacred. Everything that God has made is holy. Everything has value.
Welcome, regulars and newcomers.
You sound like a really bad southern pastor that's like...
to our podcast. We would just like to extend a special greeting to any guests we may have this morning.
That's better.
I don't know who they are because I have cataracts.
Well, it is Thursday, July something, 17th.
The 17th, which I know because I have an iPad.
Oh, look at you. So fancy. And this is Accessibly Anglican, a podcast for the Anglo-curious.
Hey, Will.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello. So
you can tell
this is a great segue to the big news of the week, of the month, of the hour, year, all those things.
Yes.
Which is that Will's a dad
for the third time.
But the first time that you've had a little boy.
Yes, I am a dad, boy dad. Mm-hmm. That's the one. I've been a girl dad for 6 years, and yeah. I'm now understanding the other side of the equation.
You might be a dad someday.
A dad. What does that mean?
Thomas might have his own children someday, hopefully.
Okay, I get your connection.
Yeah.
So yes, that's why I said high-low.
Yes.
There may be a few more blunders throughout this podcast. I got 4 hours of sleep the last 3 nights.
I can't quite claim that, but I also did not sleep well last night, also because of a precocious little boy who, it used to be easier to, like, let him cry himself to sleep, which we never did excessively, but, you know, it's one thing when he's, like, a year old and he just kind of goes to sleep, but now that he's almost three and he can say, Dad, don't leave me.
Cut straight to your soul.
Just like, okay, buddy. So I slept on the floor. Because I'm soft. I don't think it makes me soft. He's just so sweet.
It's really sweet. It's hard to say no to.
It is. And the recognition that one day he won't ask me to do that anymore.
100%. Although he might be in college and just call you and be like, Dad, I really need you to come right now and sleep next to me.
Oh my gosh, that would make my life. If he could be on the other side of the country, I'd be like, I'm getting a flight. I'm coming, buddy. But
at that point, you could just send your... sort of AI avatar. You could go sleep next to him.
On the flip side of that is that there is like some level of, you know, I have to I think the podcast is going to have a lot of moments like that today. We're both tired. You have to temper it some, you know, because I can't sleep in there every night.
Nope.
But we'll see.
You know, cannot.
We'll see how things go.
Yep.
Welcome back to the Accessibly Anglican studio. We have decorations now.
Very millennial.
That are also sound absorption.
Yep, so nice. Hopefully it sounds
a little less
that much roomy. More professional to you.
Hey, Will.
Yeah.
Now might be a bad time to bring this up, but did you use the self-adhesive to stick these to the wall? Did they come with a backing?
They're not the sort of like 3M super duper stuff. They're like these little gel... things.
Okay, that's good.
So they're much easier to get off.
I put some on my wall.
The 3M stuff.
And I ended up having to cut out like a 4x3 section of drywall and replacing it before I moved because it literally...
Yeah, those do not work as advertised.
No, especially not... It was probably worse because it was 50-year-old drywall.
Fair enough.
That, you know, the paper is all delaminated and whatever. But it looks nice.
Hoping to not have to do that when we leave this office one day.
I think I can tell a little bit of a difference.
Yep.
We're going to have some more sound.
If you didn't know
panels.
What that was, by the way, if you're not watching the video right now, that was Andrew clapping very loudly next to his microphone.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I forget that people
more people do audio than at least the last several weeks.
Yeah, true. I don't know why you wouldn't want to look at us. We're beautiful.
We are.
We're entertaining.
Yep.
But we're glad that you're here. And we are talking for the next several weeks about humanity. That sounds so vague, but like, but generally, like, what does it mean to be human
in an increasingly artificial world?
That's great.
Thanks.
And eventually we're going to talk about AI, which we're excited about, but we're first just kind of laying some groundwork of what is biblical humanity. And last week we talked about our relationship with God.
Yep.
Which, as Will put it before we got started today, is very like, have you ever heard of Christianity?
Yeah.
If you
stuck with us all the way through last podcast and you didn't roll your eyes once, well done. I'm glad.
But today we're going to talk about something that's maybe a little bit more novel for you, dear listener, which is our relationship to the natural world, to the earth, how we were sort of formed for it, and sort of the ramifications. And I would say up front that, again, as we sort of explore what it's like to do stuff that's not so overtly Anglican, like the BCP and all of that and the history of the Anglican Church, this is one that is a little more Anglican. I feel like I can say, as somebody who was a part of a different tradition for many, many years, I think that something that is unique to Anglicanism is a focus on the fact that we are embodied souls and souled bodies.
Yes.
S-O-U-L-E-D.
Yes.
Hopefully.
Incarnational. Chili con carne. All that.
And that's meaningful, obviously, because our salvation came through God as a man.
Through a body.
Through a body. So, take it away, Will. Tell us about our connection to the earth.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that introduction. It's really helpful. And setting this, reminding people that this is within the context of those four relationships. So last week we covered the vertical or the divine relationship that with God. This week we'll talk about the natural, and then we have two left, one on the social, and then finally the personal.
And one more important note, if you're someone who likes to keep up with what we're drinking week to week, because it's cold brew or hot coffee,
Red Bull
or wine. This week it's water.
Water.
We're both drinking water, so you can be proud of us because
we're so healthy.
Drinking water has become an like objectively moral good if you ask anybody.
That's true. And one day we might even be drinking water that turns into wine.
Would that be cool?
Yep.
But anyway,
that was a really we'll move on from that.
That's okay. We're drinking water today though, which is very, you know, water comes from the earth. There's a fact.
Oh, look at you.
There's a fact what a that you can share with what your friend. You can be like, listen to this so podcast. They're breaking new ground.
Tell you what, no pun intended again. Wow. Damn,
breaking ground.
Golly, look at you. You're just so, you're full of it today. All right, let's start.
New secret for the podcast. Let's not sleep beforehand and we'll do so good.
Yep. Okay, so let's jump in. I want to start. Last week, we ended the divine relationship at the beginning of chapter 2 of Genesis. Now we're going to go into the next handful of verses. This is verses 5 through 7, and this will set the tone for really this whole section. Stop me one more time.
I'll read it.
Please.
Let me read it. We'll read through it. When no bush of the field was yet in the land, and no small plant of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the land, there was no man to work the ground, and a mist was going up from the land and was watering the whole face of the ground. Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living creature.
It's perfect. All right, so two things that we're going to focus on today in terms of our connection to the natural world that makes us who we are as humans. The first is that we are from the earth. And the second is that we are for the earth. Okay, made from, made for the earth. So notice how verse 7, if you've got your Bible and you're like sitting there like a good Bible student does, that's great. But for most of us, we're probably driving or on a run. I hope that you're running to this podcast. I can't even fathom that.
I think Alex told me that he cleans his house while he listens.
Okay, perfect. So verse 7 is... describes Adam as the man of dust, which is just a great description. Like, hey, that guy's a pretty dusty guy. You know, you're like, that's maybe not the best compliment. But what I want to just sort of note here is that at this point, the writer of Genesis could have just stopped there and described him as the man. Like, Adam is of the earth, right? Like, he's making that implication. But then he goes on and he says, then God formed the man of dust and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And he keeps going and says, he formed the man of dust from the ground, right? This is called redundancy. This is what happened last week when we talked about rest. Like, God created the earth and then he rested. And by the way, he created the earth and then he rested on the third day. And then he rested once he created the earth. Like, that redundancy, this is the same thing happening. And to the writer of Genesis is trying to make a point here to say, to make a very important, indelible mark in your mind about who humans are, that they are from the dust, from the ground.
Which is why once a year we put ashes on our forehead.
That's right.
And say,
from dust you were created and to dust you shall return. Now, you caught me mid like machinery of thought there. That's why I didn't respond for like 10 seconds. But,
sorry.
But, you know, even when it says, you know, God formed the man of dust from the ground, this is like God saying, if you were like to woodenly translate it, God formed the earthling, Adam, from the earth. It's a play on words. So like the writer is making some very important theological implication here. Mm. And in doing that, he's telling us that there's a clear distinction between God's nature and man's nature. So if Genesis 1 tells us that we are like God, Genesis 2 reminds us that we are also unlike him, right? So unlike God, humans are of the earth, and therefore we are limited, inescapably so. Try as we might, we cannot run from this physical embodied nature. Our lowly estate, which is because we are from the earth, cannot sort of transcend itself. We can't upload our consciousness to the cloud and therefore become these sort of supernatural beings. We are inescapably embodied people. We can't be whatever we want to be. We are material. And that is good because it keeps us, no pun intended, grounded. Hmm. And in fact, I would say that to be fully human requires that we remain connected through our bodies to the natural world. The problem, I think, is, of course, as we're going to get into further and further in this podcast, that this has become far more difficult now than at any other period in history. I think that's pretty safe to argue, right? Like, driven by this sort of desire to make life convenient and consistent and advanced, we humans have built for ourselves an entirely artificial world, this parallel universe, as it were, that exists all around us. Like, even, we don't even have to get into ChatGPT yet. We're starting with the basics. Take electricity. You could just call that artificial sunlight, right? Which harnessing what the sun does, but to bring it into our own controlled atmosphere and to do it ourselves. Life-changing and, like, has completely advanced modern society in a way that never would have been thinkable 150 years ago. Like, when was electricity really captured? When was it really invented?
Something like that's 150, 200,
maybe 200.
So are you going to tell us that we should all be Amish?
No, I think we should keep electricity, but there's always a drawback to something good. Even with like AI, there's so much good with AI, but there's also lots of drawbacks. But for this, it means that we are no longer required to live by the natural rhythms of the day. Right? You can stay up till midnight watching reruns of whatever you want. You know,
Frasier,
Friends. You like, what's your old school show that you watch?
MASH.
No. The other one, like with that character from Mayberry.
Oh, Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith. That's like your go-to, right? Griffith.
Yeah, it's a comfort show.
So you can do that. You can doom scroll Instagram all you want or TikTok. You can get on your laptop and get that last bit of work done and then go to bed and wake up like a zombie. That's possible now in the 21st century. In the electric era, humans now get an average of 6.7 to 7.1 hours of sleep. What are you averaging these days, Andrew?
I'm above average.
Are you?
Dude, I sleep like minimum 8 hours a night, every night.
Wow.
And that's not, and to me, that's not some braggadocious thing. In fact, the narrative has been flipped on its head where like you, it's like people kind of brag about like, I only sleep 5 hours a night.
Wait, yeah, you're like, that's so, but I feel like at the same time now, there's a bit of a shift. There's so much of like a stigma around lack of sleep.
It's true.
At least
it's
in, like some pockets, in some pockets. If you're like an investment banker in Manhattan, maybe that's still a thing, but. Anyway, what's fascinating to me is that, so 6.7 to 7.1, that's the average now. That's down from 11.5 hours that people would get as recently as 1900.
Wow.
Think about that. Like, if you slept half a day, how much more energized you'd feel? I mean, you'd also feel like I'm getting nothing done. But at the same time, your body would have a very different existence.
Oh, yeah. Well, and something we might try to convince you of is that you don't always have to be getting something done.
That's
but,
right.
But I'll tell you something even more interesting that I would love to do. And I've, you talk about very niche. I have heard of people attempting to do the way that people used to live was they would go to sleep at sundown.
Yep.
They would wake up in the middle of the
night. That's right. Turn on some candles or light some candles.
In certain times, certain cultures, they would have kind of like family time.
That's right. And then they go back to sleep.
And they go back to sleep and wake up with the
sunrise.
Which
is like, I think that's the real implication here. The 11.5 hours assumes that you're not doing that midnight like party with your family.
But doesn't that sound great?
Yeah, it sounds really fun.
Not just your family, maybe even your neighbors too. You
just get together. Hey guys, it's 1 a.m. It's time to hang.
Let's go sit around the fire.
We do that now. We just don't do the first part.
Yeah.
So, and we're not just tired because of it. Like, research has shown that chronic sleep deprivation leads to memory loss, anxiety, depression, immune system weakening, heart disease, neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, premature aging, shortened lifespans. Not very good. And so what I'm trying to say is that artificial sunlight has issues. But take another example, air conditioning, right? Artificial microclimates. Who doesn't sing praises for their thermostat in the middle of an Alabama summer?
Yes. It literally saves lives.
Literally saves lives. And yet, because of climate control, humans now spend 90% of their day, or around 21 to 22 hours, indoors. So for perspective, before the Industrial Revolution, most humans spent between 8 to 12 hours outside.
So you went inside to sleep for 12 hours and then came outside for 12 hours.
That's right. And maybe that little siesta in the middle of the night, or that like hangout time was fiesta, I should say, was outside too. But, you know, it comes as no surprise that the more time that we spend in nature outside, the more human we feel. There was this study that Stanford University did that found that people who walked one time for 90 minutes – and this is not like consistently, like literally they're like, go on a walk for 90 minutes and come back and tell us what you feel. They reported a 71% decrease in their depression symptoms. Another study showed that even half an hour outside can reduce cortisol in the body by 40%. And so the point is air conditioning has its drawbacks.
So the best advice is touch grass, bro.
I mean, truly. If I could just like walk around on well manicured grass for like 12 hours a day, I think my life would be set. But we digress. That's basically saying I want to play golf all the time.
I used to, man, when I was younger, I grew up near some like real woods, some untamed wilderness. And I used to spend a lot of time just walking around.
Well, there's this new thing called forest bathing. Have you heard that? It's not what you think. It's not like you're bathing in the forest. It's literally this idea of like walking through the woods for an extended period on a regular basis. I don't know why they call it bathing. I guess you're soaking in like the green around you. But it's just had remarkable health benefits, and the studies have really take into it. But anyway, we haven't talked about screens even. Like, right, these are like basic level artificial things that we have built around our lives to make life more convenient and more comfortable. But you get further along and you begin to lose yourself in that artificial world, especially when we get to 2007, which is what?
The iPhone?
The iPhone released. You have all of a sudden screens are there. We had TV in the 80s. Parents were still complaining about kids watching too much TV. But then you take that and you put it in somebody's palm and then you let them carry it around all day long. And again, I would not like have nearly the level of like organization, productivity, efficiency if I didn't own an iPhone. I use a great app called Things3 if you're ever curious. Andrew and I like to have back and forth on the benefit of such apps, but those kinds of things, like for me, somebody that has like ADHD to the max, to have like something where I can just locate everything and organize it, it's amazing. If I was using pen and paper, nothing would get done. So all that's to say, I like screens. But the average American spends 7 to 9 hours each day in front of a screen.
Not me.
I mean, you know that feeling? Like when you've been staring at your laptop or your phone like all morning and you finally get up for lunch, you get like blurry eyes and like a throbbing head and it takes you like 15 minutes to reacclimate to the world.
Yeah, man, that's part of why I quit my last job.
It's like the life is sucked out of you. You're like in this virtual like death spiral and now you're like waking back up to the real.
And this is a bit of a tangent from the main point, but I will say there is like a marked difference between if I am literally just like scrolling through posts that I'm like, so like, you know, I don't even necessarily enjoy. And
I actually kind of hate that I'm doing this right
yes.
now.
Yes. Yeah. That is a much worse feeling than like, oh, I watched 2 episodes of Andy Griffith, which is sure. like kind of warming for the soul.
For sure. So there, which I think you're getting into like the further along you go into the spiral of like artificiality, the worse the lure becomes. But yeah. I think the startling implication of being disconnected from creation is that many of us, I think it's safe to say, have begun to prefer the artificial to the natural. Like we'd rather email, text, or DM than talk to someone in person, right? We'd rather drive with the windows closed and the AC blasting than have them down. We'd rather live, I mean, most people, like you and I would probably push back. I love my Jeep with the top off. You love your motorcycle. But a lot of people, they're like, I don't want to mess up my hair, or I want to like, I want to feel like the same temperature on my body all day long. Like I want to get out of the house, go into the car, go into the next building, and I want it to be 70 degrees my entire existence.
We have somehow come back around to the fact that owning a motorcycle is a spiritual practice.
Which we started, I think, the first episode on
that. Yes.
So again,
buy a motorcycle or a Jeep.
Yeah.
I'm just jealous because I don't have a Jeep. I'd love to have a Jeep.
I'm kind of jealous because I don't have a motorcycle. So we can swap.
We could trade some. Hey.
Yeah.
Be great.
You do a week of like back and forth. Mm-hmm. House swap, but with wheels. You get the point. Like slowly but surely, the artificial actually becomes our reality. And what happens is that our humanity, if we were created from the earth and therefore meant to maintain a connection to the same, our humanity becomes depleted. We become disconnected from our bodies and from the earth from which they were made. And here's the thing. When we live that way, not only does it damage our connection, it damages creation itself. And that's the second takeaway from Genesis 2, is that we were made not just from the earth, but for it. Okay, so verses 5 and 6, let's go back. Before God makes the land to bear fruit, he needs a helper to take care of it. So to bring it into its full potential, God talks about it's not good for the man to be alone. He talks about that later in Genesis 2. But I think there's an implication here too, where God says that he needs a helper for it. It's not good for the land to be alone.
Like surely he could have taken care of it himself, just like he could have never formed the world at all.
And yet he chooses to make this particular design for a particular purpose, and he makes this helper fit for it. We often talk about Eve as a helper that's fit for Adam. Well, before we even get there, and we'll get there next week, there's a subject, the land, and it needs a helper. And Adam is that helper which is fit to the land. So all go ahead. No, okay. On its own, And the main point I want to make here is that the land, because of God, the way that God designed it, could not become what it was intended. It couldn't flourish. It couldn't be all that it was meant to be unless that man, unless humanity was able to take care of it. So verses 15 and following, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work and to keep it. That was his call. And the implication of being made from the earth is very simply connection. To be fully human, and this is where maybe we're going to get the most edgy on this particular episode, but to be fully human requires that we inhabit our God-given vocation to care for creation. At a very minimum, this means that we respect its natural integrity, right? That we use its resources mindfully in a way that appreciates and acknowledges its inherent value as something that's been created by God and called verbatim good. But again, modern life has made this incredibly difficult.
Possibly impossible. Possibly if you want to go down that rabbit hole.
And we'll get there in a little bit. So like, just take the most like basic, we just talked about Jeeps and motorcycles, right? Driving a combustion vehicle or even an E, like an electric vehicle that has all these component parts. If you're living in Alabama and you own a Tesla, good on you. But it's also just like a coal mobile because all of the energy that's being used to charge your battery at night is coming from coal powered plants, a lot of it. Anyway, that's beside the point. We're not going to get into that discussion of like electric versus combustion. That's for another episode. But this is such a normal facet of life for most Americans, unless you live in like a super urban setting like your brother now does in Chicago. Shout out.
Yeah, they don't own a – Michael and Peyton don't own a car.
They sold their car, right?
Good for
you. Which
y'all.
Is awesome. It's very way cool. Way to go. But you have to fly a jet to come down here to see your family. So anyway, but you know, the average American car, like any car in America emits 10,000 pounds of carbon dioxide each year. Let's just play that out. So with an estimated 290 million registered vehicles in America, that comes out to 3 trillion pounds. That's just in America. Now the amount of carbon that's absorbed annually in the United States through forests, speaking of forests, and land use practices is 1.8 trillion pounds, which means that just vehicles, just motor vehicles alone exceed our absorption rate by nearly double. And therefore, our total carbon footprint is around 12 trillion pounds. And that just, regardless of what that means, that's just a lot, right? Yeah. And regardless of your political persuasion or your view on climate change, what the numbers should indicate is that our way of life is just, by math alone, out of balance with creation's natural capacities. It's like our federal deficit. You can't keep spending what you don't have.
And I'll take this as an opportunity to point out something that Will and I have been talking about off camera a good bit is I don't think you will and kind of hope you won't hear a ton of politics from us, but our sort of shared, like what we agree on the most is just the fact that politics in general, either side, any part of the spectrum, has strongly co-opted certain values that don't belong to them.
That's right.
It's very hard to not become one dimensional.
Yes.
And again, without going into too much detail, fill in the gaps yourself. You know, respecting the climate is very politically charged towards one side.
That's right.
And that's maybe just not how it should be, as we're hopefully
giving
you something to think about here.
Yeah. I mean, last week we talked about like what it means to be fully human is to be connected to God. That generally probably on the political spectrum tilts in one direction.
That's true too. Yeah. I didn't even really think about that. But
But
the fact is, like, as a Christian, I guess it's becoming increasingly difficult as our society is polarized, but you don't necessarily have to just throw away some set of values because you feel that it doesn't align with your political beliefs.
And hopefully what we're doing here is we're actually getting underneath the politics. We're not like actually engaging in politics. We're saying, what is the source material of Christianity? Well, this is Genesis 1 and 2.
And somewhat related, I will tell you a common argument that I've heard, an argument that I've used in the past,
yep.
And then maybe again give some sort of context here,
yeah.
Which is, I've heard people say, God created the earth, he wouldn't let us destroy it. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, if that's a true or false statement. But what we're kind of talking about here is that we could flip that question on its mm-hmm. head and say that point doesn't matter, whether or not we have the ability to sure. fully destroy the earth, or that God would let us. Like, we do have the ability. We could set off nuclear bombs and destroy the world.
Yeah.
But it's a question of, what were we made for? What was the earth made for?
That's right.
And what is our responsibility to it?
How do we live in line with the grain by which God has set the universe?
Yes.
Okay, so that's just one example is cars. Right. Another one that's just part of normal life now is going to the grocery store or ordering your groceries online, right? What we buy each week from the grocery store, 80% of it comes from highly industrialized farming practices. And on the one hand, that's a really good thing because it means that there's greater consistency in our food system. Like, we don't starve just because there's like one bad drought that happens. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, it has all sorts of negative impacts on creation. As you might be aware, when you use a piece of land, the same piece over and over again without letting it lie fallow, the nutrients in the land diminish to the point of not existing anymore, right? Like, in modern agriculture, instead of letting the land recover, we just pour synthetic fertilizers into the ground to keep it going. It's like a drug addict that needs more and more. And literally, like, you can't put the same amount of fertilizer down the next time. You have to do more. Mm. And once you go the synthetic route, the nutrients in the ground go away, and you have to throw increasing more and more on top of it. And it's not just bad for human health, like if you're eating this food that's been infected with synthetic fertilizers, but at some point the land just becomes completely useless, like barren. Like in the Mississippi Delta, there's like a project underway right now of like trying to like bring dead land back into use because they've literally killed it. It cannot produce anything right now. And so there's a group of people that are trying to like bring nutrient, like it takes years to actually revive dead land. So, I mean, again, it doesn't take a biologist to recognize that doesn't exactly line up with our call to care for God's creation. The last one I want to give you is the one that probably hits home the most for probably all of us listening to this is online shopping, right? Again, none of these are meant to be guilt trips. They're just recognizing the difficult place that we've put ourselves in as human beings.
You and I are not in any place to guilt trip.
Not, no, I mean,
anyway.
I freaking love Amazon. It's so mm-hmm. easy.
Yeah.
But the Amazonian revolution, if you can call it that, where we can now get anything we need with just a couple swipes on. I mean, it's like even now they're making their own trucks. It's like that.
Oh, yeah.
Invested in our lives. But the sheer amount of waste produced simply because of online shopping is mind-boggling. Think about Amazon by itself, like all the e-commerce that happens out there. It's way above this, but just use Amazon for an example. They ship, in the United States alone, 6.3 billion boxes of cardboard to customers every year. And that's made by harvesting, if you do the math, 27 million trees. And so the vast majority of that does not go into recycling. It doesn't go into a repurposed use. It's thrown off into landfills, which then sets out copious amounts of methane and often leaks toxic pollution into the soil.
And not trying to just make you sad, but sometimes even when you do recycle, it does not.
It doesn't get recycled.
Right.
I mean, a lot of times. So there's that piece, but then that doesn't even make mention of the energy that's used in the production of the boxes mm-hmm. and in the delivery of them in those trucks that they've nicely made. And don't forget free returns. But here's the point. Like, it's not that we should never use Amazon or that we shouldn't drive cars or that we should never use Publix. The fact of the matter is that I think you and I would agree our common life as modern, at least in America, as modern Americans, we're dependent on these things. This is how we live. If you try to go against the grain, it's very, very hard. But the question I think that's most important for us in this discussion today is not so much the how should we respond. I'll give you a funny example in a minute. But the why. Why have we chosen to arrange our lives in this way? And I think the answer is pretty clear. that we have forgotten that at the heart of our vocation as human beings is benevolent stewardship toward creation. Like, we've made the assumption that we can neglect that call and remain just as human along the way. Like, those two things don't have an effect on the other. But I think the unfortunate reality is that's just not the case. When we abandon the call to steward creation, two things happen. Number one, we devalue our own bodies. So in the natural world, to neglect it, what we're also telling ourselves implicitly is not just that, you know, the soil doesn't matter, but that we don't matter. Like, our physical nature is worthless. Like, we fall in the same trap that we talked about last week of dualism, right? That there's these two natures. What really makes us human is our sort of intellectual or our sort of spiritual side, but our bodies are a necessary evil. Have you ever noticed how people that are really into fitness often are also really into, like, natural foods and taking care of the earth? Like, once you start caring for your body, you also tend to start caring about what you put into your body.
And I've seen a lot of people that tend to their souls as well.
That's right. Like, it's a waterfall. Like, one thing produces the other and leads to the other.
So don't quit Amazon. Do go to the gym.
Perfect. That's all we really want you to think. But it is true. I mean, like, caring for one aspect of creation can lead to the care of another, and neglecting it does the opposite. But the second, I think, implication is that when we reject stewardship, the earth has a tendency, like an ignored child, to act out. Right? Like, the effects of climate change are notoriously difficult to pin down to any single human activity. But I think it's safe to say that the cumulative effect has been empirically linked to things like increased intensity of severe weather, right? Warmer ocean temperatures, for instance, like, they provide more energy for tropical storms, and that increases their wind speeds. It increases their rainfall rates. Warmer air temperatures mean longer, more frequent, and more intense droughts, which leads to all sorts of issues like wildfires and tsunami-sized dust clouds that destroy life and property. And of course, we just have gone through the awful situation of the floods in Texas. Like, who knows what amount of that is human caused? But the point is, neglecting creation has devastating effects for its own, for humans, because of the way that we are designed to live in the earth that has a way of acting out when we don't care for it. But the point is, there are negative consequences. And I think that's something that we have to, as humans that engage with Genesis 2, have to sort of react to, have to sort of deal with. But I think the last thing I want to close with is our response. So this is the how. Like, if that's true, then what do we do? And I think ultimately the question is, how do we do so in a context where that's really difficult? But I think the first answer is pretty straightforward, that we have to just become more mindful of our patterns of consumption, like how we eat, what we eat, how we buy products, and from whom, and what impacts those have on our daily lives. You know, Ashley and I, we had a point, I say Ashley and I, it was really me. Where
I appreciate the honesty.
Where, like, we were like, okay, if this is true, then maybe we should, like, reduce our dependence on plastic, especially, like, single-use plastics. We started using, like, shampoo bars instead of shampoo bottles. We actually still use those. They're really great. But we just, like, there's only so much you can do without making it an entire lifestyle. Like, everything has to shift. Like, there's this book that came out a few years ago called Zero Waste Home by Bea Johnson, who's a rock star, by the way. But, like, this is her entire life. And she talks about how she and her husband made for themselves this very acute challenge of producing zero waste in their home. Like, no trash, not even, like, going into a trash can to go out to, like, a landfill, like, zero. And if you think that's impossible, it is. But they came really close. And in doing so, they set fire on what's been called the zero waste movement. Google it if you've not ever heard of it. It's fascinating. But after reading that, I made for our family this challenge to go plastic free, to buy all of our food and household goods without plastic wrapping or containers or what have you. And that also meant, like, no Ziploc bags. We had to use all, like, those what's the material that they make those like reusable Ziplocs with? I can't think of the name of it. Silicone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, I went to the grocery store and I had them put our sandwich turkey in silicone envelopes. And I got a lot of looks from people. It meant us going to Left Hand Soap Company downtown and buying all of our soaps outside of packaging from them and so on. But after a few weeks, as you can already see this happening, I just completely burned out. Like, trying to go completely plastic free in modern life is like swimming upstream with a backpack on with lead inside of it during a hurricane. It's just like not a good idea.
Well, and something, so when I mentioned that towards the beginning, and I'll try not to dive too deeply into this, but okay, you can do all of those things. Yep. And the fact of the matter is somewhere along the way, something still got shipped by a truck.
That's right.
You mentioned that if you drive an EV in Alabama, it's coal power, and that yep. still pollutes. And the batteries in your EV, there were pollutants when they mined the lithium. And
probably killed some, like, indigent workers who were mining them
and indigenous species. And
yeah,
it's unfortunate, but it's also maybe a little bit of comfort in if I'm following yes. you is to say that you can try, you yes. can be mindful, you can recognize that it matters, and you can also give yourself some grace
yes.
when you can't be zero waste or whatever.
Yeah. Which yeah, just like impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I did learn from that is, number one, you certainly cannot do it alone. Like, to actually implement anything of real lasting value needs to be done within a community setting. And you need to be part of a community that is trying to live in the same direction. Like, what we're trying to do at our church at Restoration, just slowly through a drip process, is to reinforce these theological realities. Like, we live as people created for this purpose.
One small example
come on.
Is actually this iPad we bought
which was mined with... No, keep going.
We didn't buy a new iPad because, well, partially because of the cost. We didn't need yep. to. But the website that I bought it from pointed out that buying a used refurbished iPad mm-hmm. is better for the environment.
That's right. Little small things... And I think the other thing is, with the cooperation of other people, you can do a lot more than you think. So let's take the example of Restoration. We're not doing all these things yet, but I pray that we will in time. But let's say that the people of a church, of a local community, want to lean more deeply into their humanity by caring for creation. They start a community compost pile on their property. We actually kind of had that for a little bit when we had mm-hmm. this garden that somebody gave us to steward. You go to church on Sunday morning and you drop off your food scraps before you go to worship. You partner with a local farm to form a food co-op where the groceries are picked up after church on Sunday. Like, they're there waiting for you. One of the members, let's say, loves to bake, and there's a wait list for her weekly sourdough subscription. Shout out to Abby, by the way, who's made gluten-free sourdough. Another is a woodworker and loves to make toys for kids out of wood. Not plastic. And yeah. then you have a few that are close neighbors and they've started carpooling to church and they go to lunch with each other after the service on Sunday. If they don't have kids, that is. you know.
Well,
I mean, the Hannises and the Panics yeah. could happen.
Alex, if you're listening, hit me up.
Come on.
I got to be there early, but, you know.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think that what I'm trying to get at is, like, there are little wins that you can find along the way. And as those little wins happen, it's like a light switch goes off and you begin to envision the possibility of doing life in a different direction. And I think you just, as you do that, you feel a little bit of your humanity coming back to you. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, the point is that this is a gospel prerogative. Not that we can do it perfectly, but, you know, think about people like N.T. Wright, who've written a lot about this. I love one of his quotes where he says, the gospel is about the coming of God's kingdom, but it's a kingdom that will affect the entirety of the created order and our lives within it. In announcing the good news, we're not just saying that Jesus gave us salvation, but we're announcing that in Christ, God is restoring the whole of creation, including us. And therefore, at the end of the day, our relationship to the natural world is not just a matter of political persuasion or personal preference, it's a matter of the gospel. And to preach it honestly means preaching it to the whole of our humanity. One more quote for you. This is from the late Pastor Tim Keller. The gospel creates a whole new way of being human. which brings together body and soul, personal salvation and social healing, private faith, and public good. I think my prayer for the church at large at this point is that this kind of framework would just slowly work its way into our bones. Not that we would turn it into some, you know, new cause or make a new political party out of it, but that we would simply let the Bible influence our worldview in a way that is able to go deeper than politics and hopefully expresses its way through our politics, but is starting from a very different place.
To kind of close, if we could, to closure after your closure.
Come on.
Could you just speak briefly to our namesake? Because I remember us talking about there are ways that Anglicanism in particular is sort of predisposed to this incarnational thinking, which is what we've talked about. Yep. So like, how could it speak specifically to this, to our stewardship of the earth?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, I just quoted from N.T. Wright, read a book by N.T. Wright and your whole world. If you've never like delved into that world of like N.T. Wright and who are the other writers? I mean, I guess more contemporary people would be like what is her name? Tish Harrison Warren. Some of these Anglican, right? Esau Macaulay. We're just talking about the outward dimensions of our faith. That they're important. And I think it just bears the fact that our foremost writers in the Anglican space have this worldview tells you something. And it tells you that we start from an incarnational place that in the spectrum of Jesus's life, death, and resurrection, his life matters just as much as his death and resurrection. Anglicans get that. We take sacraments. We have a whole appreciation for the extraordinariness of the ordinary and how something that's simple as bread and wine could become something very sacred. Well, it's because ultimately all of creation is sacred. Everything that God has made is holy. Everything has value. And I think that is something that's implicit to Anglicans based on our appreciation for those kinds of things, but also based on a historic close reading of scripture. And I think those things are naturally paired well when you come into an Anglican setting. And I think the last thing I would say is that, you know, a lot of our worship as Anglicans is inherently embodied. Mm. We've talked a little bit about this, but liturgy itself, like there's a performative action that's happening with your body.
Yeah.
Like you're getting up to profess your faith. You're sitting down to confess your sins. You're if you had kneelers, you're kneeling to pray the Lord's Prayer. And so there's an implicit recognition that our bodies matter. And that even matters in the setting of worship and how much more so than in the setting of life.
Awesome. So go to the farmer's market.
Yep.
Go to the gym.
Yep.
Do the daily office.
Perfect.
But that's it. Until next time when we talk about
The social relationship next week.
Our relationship with other people.
Yeah. And specifically, how did God form these two humans? One was called man, one was called woman. How do they relate? How does that work itself out in God's flourishing economy? Last thing I would say is if you have feedback from this episode, if you have questions, if you have comments, we'd love to get them.
If you
want
to argue with us.
Please take it up on YouTube or DMS on our Instagram account, Accessibly Anglican.
We got a lovely comment last week, and it was very encouraging. Makes us excited to be here today to do that this week. So,
Well, until next time, I'm Will Schaferman.
And I'm Andrew Panik.
This is Accessibly Anglican,
a podcast for the Anglo-curious.